into creating it. And it's far more powerful than a hex. Multi-use artifacts are the most valuable, but they can't be triggered over and over like shooting a gun. They passively gather energy to fuel the spell. And once you use it, you need to wait for the spell to recharge.
Oh, that explains why it didn't work every time. How long does recharging take?
Depends on the spell. For some, a minute or two. For others, days or weeks.
The sorcerer had used the Queen of Spades, then I had used it. But I wasn't sure how much time had passed. More than 2 minutes. Less than 7, I was guessing. Ramsay tapped the card.
All artifact incantations begin with Ori, which awakens the spell. Then you speak the command word or phrase. Repercutio means to rebound or strike back.
So I just need to point this card at an incoming magical attack and speak the incantation, and it'll reflect it no matter what?
It'll reflect incoming magic up to a point. That spell has limits, though there's no easy way to determine how much it can handle. Still.
He straightened.
It's valuable. If you want to sell it, let me know.
You want to buy it?
I couldn't afford it, but I could find a buyer for you. Like I said, I collect this kind of stuff, so I know people.
What's it worth?
I bet you could get 25, maybe 30 for it.
I pulled a face. How broke was he that he couldn't afford 30 bucks? I think we define valuable differently.
You don't think $30,000 is valuable?
I thought you meant... yeah, that's a lot of money. I'll let you know if I decide to sell it. Controlling my shock, I stuck the Dark Queen back in my pocket. Note to self, do not lose card.
Oh, and Tori, keep that to yourself.
He turned to the sink to wash his hands.
Humans aren't allowed to own artifacts. Most mythics would be delighted to take it off your hands whether you wanted to give it up or not.
Well, didn't that sound awesome? Was he including his fellow guild members as mythics I needed to watch out for? Back at the bar, Aaron and Kai had appeared, sitting on stools with their heads bent over a laptop. I offered a quick greeting as I prepped my station and served drinks to the dozen patrons waiting for service, and waiting to hear more about the Goon Squad attack on the weekend. By the time I had a breather, Sin had joined Aaron and Kai, her blue hair gleaming in the dim lights. She offered me a cautious smile when I approached, which I returned with equal wariness. "How are your injuries?" she asked. "Healing fast. That cream you gave me is amazing stuff." As I slid a rum and coke each to Aaron and Kai, I asked her, "Do you want anything?" "Not right now. Thanks." I craned my neck to peek at the laptop screen. "What you working on?" Aaron leaned back.
"I called my parents, but their sources can't find anything on a group of mythics aiming to exploit the family. I'm wondering if it might be related to the rogue sorcerer we took out on Saturday,"
Kai said, tapping away at the keyboard.
"It seems too fast, though."
"What about the attackers?" I asked. "Can't someone question them?"
"They all escaped before the cops showed up. We don't know who they are or where they came from."
Kai glanced up, a darkly amused gleam in his eyes.
"So Aaron is babysitting you, and I'm babysitting Aaron, until we figure out who's after him."
Aaron gave a long-suffering sigh.
"I don't need babysitting here. No one would be stupid enough to waltz into guild headquarters."
"True."
Kai pulled the laptop closer.
"But I need to get some work done anyway."
The evening passed quickly. Clara stopped to fuss over my eye and thank me for helping Aaron. I got more congratulations. According to mythics, a black eye was cause for celebration. But what surprised me most was that Aaron didn't downplay how dire the situation had been. And if I answered questions too modestly, he would correct me, making it clear that if I hadn't jumped in to help, he wouldn't be here. I'd expected a guy with as much ego as him to hate admitting something like that. When Sin came upstairs to the pub, she was working in the alchemy lab in the basement tonight, to get a soda. Aaron was in the middle of retelling the story to Lyndon the sorcerer. "Doesn't it bother him?" I muttered as I passed her a coke, telling everyone how he needed help. As she slid onto a stool, Sin shrugged. "Mages are always tough, and Aaron is one of our best. Admitting he needed help only shows how powerful and capable his opponents were. We all know he isn't weak or stupid." Huh. I poured myself a Coke. What about Kai and Ezra? Kai doesn't have as much brute power as Aaron, but he was well-trained and disciplined even before joining the guild. I wouldn't want him as my enemy, that's for sure. She stirred her glass with the straw. As for Ezra, he makes good use of the magic he has, but he isn't in Aaron and Kai's league. A lot of it is genetics. Some bloodlines are extremely gifted. Others aren't. Aaron and Kai didn't give off the impression that Ezra was a lesser mage, but when they captured that rogue sorcerer, Ezra was the only one who'd been hurt in the fight. Taking a gulp of my Coke, I remembered Ezra's invisible rage, the way the room had gone ice cold and the lights had dimmed. That didn't seem like something a weak mage could do just out of temper. But what did I know? They seem like really good friends, I murmured. Best friends. Sin agreed, resting her chin on her hand. Aaron and Kai have been as close as brothers since they were teenagers, and they joined the guild together. Ezra showed up a year or two after and applied to join, and Aaron and Kai took him under their wing. At least, that's what I heard. They've been inseparable since the day I met them. The last bit came out kind of grumpy, and I raised my eyebrows questioningly. Sin checked no one was listening in, then bent closer. I've never met three guys who are this ridiculously hot, but so undateable. She whispered vehemently. Kai is always seeing like five women at the same time. Aaron only dates girls he thinks his parents will loathe, and Ezra practically runs and hides if you flirt with him. It's not fair. Rant over, she primly sipped her drink. I stared at her. Aaron only dates girls his parents will hate? Maybe not on purpose, but the pattern is obvious. She flapped her hand. Anyway, sorry to derail. What were we talking about? I wasn't sure anymore. Aaron wanted to ask me out, though the ambush had delayed his plans. Did he see me as a girl his parents would hate? I smiled to myself. Upsetting parents, I was good at that. Sin fiddled with her straw. Honestly, Tori, I'm surprised you showed up today. You are? I expected you to ghost us. It's not like we've been welcoming. Guilt flickered across her features. Then being followed home and seeing Aaron attacked out of nowhere, fighting rogues and getting beat up, dealing with mythics comes with risks, especially when you don't have magic to defend yourself, and the Crow and Hammer isn't a safe, easy guild. I figured you'd walk away and never look back. She gazed at me expectantly, waiting for a response, but I said nothing. My thoughts scrambled. Now that she'd spelled it out, ditching the guild would have been the smart reaction to a near-deadly assault by criminal mythics, but I hadn't given the idea any serious consideration. Was there something wrong with me? Did I enjoy danger? A strange feeling prickled in my stomach. Maybe it wasn't that I enjoyed danger, but that I hated boredom. This place, these people, they weren't and never would be boring. At the end of the night, Aaron drove me home in his old red sports car. Kai crammed in the back so I could ride in the passenger seat. We saw no signs of stalkers or would-be abductors. The rest of the week passed in comfortable routine. College in the morning, walking to the Crow and Hammer after class, hanging with Aaron, accompanied by Kai or Ezra, and visiting with Sin whenever she came up from the basement lab for a drink or snack. Now that she wasn't sabotaging my bar, she was fun to talk to. Her apology had been genuine and I'd decided to forgive her, especially since I suspected Tabitha had been the whispering devil on her shoulder. The biggest difference between my first week and my second, however, was the atmosphere. Putting my life on the line to protect a guild member had triggered a major shift in attitude. I wasn't living in a magical fairy tale where everyone now adored me, but the overall response to my presence was improving. More members smiled and made small talk. More friendly greetings, more tips. The cheer didn't vanish off their faces when they got near me. I'd thought weeknights were slow, but now I suspected members had been avoiding the pub. It was busier, livelier, and way more fun. Laughter, jokes, lots of banter. Drunken goofing off, mythic style. Some people still despised me, but the number was shrinking. Any night Tabitha was on duty promised to suck. She always showed up at the worst moments, and though her cool remarks were never overly antagonistic, by the time she vanished back upstairs, I'd be mired in bitter anger. Her subtle ability to make me feel unwelcome and unappreciated was as impressive as it was disheartening. Sylvia the Hag and I had reached a cold truce. Liam the Weasley telepathic had apologized and hadn't tried anything creepy since. Tom, the bookworm psychic, came in every night for a few drinks and quality reading time in his favorite corner. Alyssa, a girl with banana blonde hair, was so aloof I was surprised she hadn't injured herself walking around with her nose in the air. But whatever. The jerk trio of vampire hunters, Sierra, Darren, and Cameron, had developed a real talent for insulting me whenever no one was listening. But I was coping. On the last occasion when Darren had deliberately spilled a freshly made Long Island iced tea across the bar, I'd spun around in the middle of pouring a drink and sprayed him in the face with my soda gun. Whoopsies. It was getting better. It was getting fun. I was learning who was always up for good-natured banter and who was never in a good mood. Who liked to chat, who hated small talk. Who was fun and who was trouble. And through it all, Aaron was there with either Kai or Ezra, keeping me company and backing me up when someone was an asshole. For the first time in a long time, I found myself eager to go to work. It was a good week, and by the time Saturday rolled around again, I was in the groove. Aaron and Ezra were parked at the far end of the bar, Aaron playing a video game while Ezra cheered him on. The pub was hopping, and I zoomed in and out of the kitchen, taking orders and making drinks. As the dinner rush died down, I carried a plate between tables. I didn't normally deliver food, letting patrons wait at the bar for their meal, but the girl who'd ordered was sitting at a table with cards spread across the surface in a strange pattern. I nudged the plate onto the only free corner. Need anything else? No, this is fine, thank you so much. She gave me a distracted smile and offered her hand. I'm Sabrina, by the way. Tori, nice to meet you. Sabrina shifted in her seat. Her large brown eyes emphasized with heavy makeup and fake eyelashes. You spend a lot of time with Aaron and Kai, right? At work, I confirmed. Yeah? Do you have their numbers? I lost them and haven't had a chance to ask again. Something about her innocent tone made me suspicious. Sorry, can't help you there. Oh, she said glumly, adjusting her salon-perfect blonde bob. Why don't you just ask? Aaron's right there. When I turned to get his attention, she waved urgently. No, no, that's fine. I'll ask later. Uh-huh. Sweeping all the cards together, she beamed as though hoping to distract me. Would you like a reading? The cards she was stacking into a neat pile had black backs with a gold sun and moon forming an ornate yin-yang, while the fronts featured ink drawings. Tarot cards. I'd normally scoff at that kind of stuff, but I was standing in a magic guild, so, yeah. You just used your card, Sabrina. An old woman flounced over to the table, glaring through her turquoise-framed glasses. You must cleanse your deck before performing another reading. I know how to use my cards. Sabrina straightened the deck with more violence than necessary. Butt out, Rose. Glare vanishing, Rose bestowed a gentle smile on me, her wispy white hair sticking out from beneath her knitted cap. I'd be happy to do a reading for you, dear. Sabrina is a young diviner, still learning her craft. I have many years of experience with which to... Butt out, Rose! Sabrina growled. Tori, take a seat. I looked from Rose's smug face to Sabrina's pleading stare and reluctantly sat. I've never, had a reading before.
If a real diviner didn't do it, then it would have been useless anyway, Sabrina said cheerfully, shuffling her deck with mesmerizing speed. A reading doesn't predict the future like those charlatans claim, but it shines light on the forces moving around you, and it can reveal the path, or one of many paths, that lies before you.
Rose tittered. Without cleansing her deck, Sabrina's reading will be tainted with the energies of her previous reading. And doing a reading here and all this noise and activity, useless.
It's fine, Sabrina snapped. I know my cards, Rose.
The old lady scoffed. Sabrina set the deck in front of me.
First, shuffle the cards to imbue them with your energy.
I eyed them warily.
Will this take long? I can't be away from the bar for... Only a few minutes, don't worry. Go ahead, shuffle them. While you do, think about the question you most want answered.
I picked up the worn cards, still warm from Sabrina's hands. As I clumsily shuffled them, I tried to think of something. A question immediately bloomed in my mind. What next? It felt like I was settling in here, like I was fitting in. I enjoyed it. I could relax instead of dance across thin ice each shift, waiting for the guillotine to drop and my job to get cut out from under me. But it was only temporary. Once Darius got back from his conference thing, he'd sign off on my paperwork and Magipol would give me the boot back into the human world. Even if they didn't boot me, I'd already faced more danger at this job than any other. Aaron's attackers were on the loose, their identities unknown. On top of that, Tabitha hated my guts, and she wasn't the only one. What was I supposed to do? What came next?
That should be enough, Sabrina told me. Now cut the deck.
I cut it and passed it to her. She stroked the top card, her eyes losing focus.
Very good. Your energy has suffused the cards.
With dreamy movements, she pulled the top card and laid it face down on the table, then drew a second. One after another, she laid 7 cards on the table in a V-shape. Rose sniffed.
I would have done a Celtic cross spread for a more in-depth...
Shut up, Rose! This is the spread the cards want.
Sabrina settled in her chair and placed her fingers on the first card.
This one represents your past.
She turned it over, revealing a painting of jeweled goblets. It faced me, making it upside down for Sabrina.
The 6 of cups, reversed. That suggests your past is holding sway over your future.
She turned over the next card, revealing a tumbling building.
Your present, the tower. Sudden dramatic change has toppled your stable patterns.
Sudden dramatic change? Oh, definitely. This job had thrown everything in my life out of whack. I wasn't complaining, though. Sabrina turned the third card, revealing an array of blades.
The 7 of swords.
What does that mean? I asked.
The third card in the spread represents hidden influences in your life, and the 7 of swords suggests deception. Someone is misleading you.
Rose scoffed, and Sabrina shot her a glare before touching the next card.
This one represents yourself.
She flipped it.
The hermit.
I wrinkled my nose at the artistic rendering of a bearded old man. That's flattering.
The hermit is a card of wisdom and proud independence, but it's reversed.
Sabrina pointed and I realized the card was facing me, not her.
The reversal warns that the strengths of the hermit may also be weaknesses.
A chill ran down my spine. Okay, I was getting creeped out. What's the next card?
The 5th card represents the people in your life.
She turned it over to reveal an armored man with a sword.
The Knight of Swords. Loyalty, determination, courage. This is what surrounds you. Ah, but...
She turned over the next card.
8 of Swords. You fear commitment. You're holding back.
I sucked in a deep breath to calm my racing heart.
And the last card? The last card is the outcome. The end of this path. Keep your question in mind now.
Sabrina touched the card, her eyes distant, then flipped it over.
Oh...
Rose gasped. I stared, feeling cold all over. A lovingly detailed Grim Reaper with a bloody scythe graced the card.
Is that what I think it is?
Sabrina coughed delicately.
This is the death card, but it doesn't mean you're going to die. It's the card of transformation, of endings and beginnings.
Yeah, not particularly comforting. Hovering her hands over the tarot spread, Sabrina sat quietly, her vacant stare moving from card to card.
Conflict surrounds you. You're caught in the midst of a violent change, and deception lurks in the shadows, calling the conflict ever closer. Your past stands in the way of your future, but though you've walked this far alone, others are waiting to join you. Even greater change awaits you, but its form...
She lightly touched the 8 of swords.
will be shaped by the fear that rules your heart.
Ominous silence fell over the table. My focus shifted from the crumbling tower to the chilling specter of death, to the armored knight with his sword raised, then darted to Aaron and Ezra, shoulder to shoulder as they battled aliens on the laptop. Conflict, yes, but the swords deliver a different message, Rose declared. She tapped the Six of Swords, the Knight, then the Eight of Swords. Secrets. Truth. Risk. Dangerous secrets will challenge the loyalty of your strongest allies. And if you seek the truth... Her gaze dropped to the Death card. It will not be your fate alone bared to the Reaper's blade. Sabrina slapped Rose's hand away, huffing furiously.
You can't read another diviner's cards properly. Even an amateur knows that.
She gathered up the seven cards and returned them to the deck.
Tori, what question did you ask the cards?
I swallowed hard. What comes next for me? Sabrina and Rose exchanged a long, mysterious look that made me even more nervous.
Ah,
Sabrina muttered.
Well, you should know the cards don't determine the future. They reveal the path you're currently following, but you have the power to shift your destiny. Change your heart, and you'll change your path.
Right. I forced a smile. My question wasn't very specific anyway. The thing coming next for me is a shopping trip on Robson Street tomorrow. Maybe someone will try to rip me off. Sabrina laughed.
I doubt the cards can predict something like that, but you're right. No need to worry. Just keep the reading in mind.
She should take my warning seriously, Rose insisted. That reading was fraught with conflict and danger. Life and death are bound to a secret she must uncover before...
Where are you planning to shop?
Sabrina asked loudly, drowning out Rose.
My favorite store is down by Burrard Street.
Grinning, I launched into a description of my favorite shops. Rose stalked off, shooting flinty stares at her young divination rival the whole way. I chatted with Sabrina for a few minutes, then got back to work, trying not to dwell on her reading. But the ominous words kept repeating in my head. I would have loved to discount it as complete bullshit, but I'd seen too much magic in the last couple weeks to ignore the reading, no matter how unsettling it might be. Chapter 14. I wasn't broke anymore, and it was time to splurge. Just a bit. Friday had been payday, and thanks to my new and improved hourly wage, I had some cash flow. Rent for the month was paid, my bank account was comfortably outside the danger zone, and I was buying one brand new top. The limit on my purchasing power didn't bother me since I enjoyed the process of shopping a lot more than spending money. Yeah, I know, shopping is a girly activity, but I'm allowed to like one of those, right? I strolled down Robson Street, moving with the flow of foot traffic. The sun beamed down and the air smelled of salty ocean water. I'd tempted fate by leaving my umbrella at home, but so far so good. Not a single cloud marred the vivid blue sky, and half the city was outside enjoying the warm Sunday afternoon before the weekend tragically perished from a terminal case of Monday. My phone chimed. Slipping it from my pocket, I quickly replied to Sin's text. We'd chatted this morning, and she was meeting me for lunch and a movie. I loved spontaneous plans, and I was long overdue for girl time. Making new friends was a skill I hadn't practiced since elementary school, and the co-workers I'd gotten friendly with at previous jobs had dropped me like moldy bread once I was fired. Picking up my pace, I zipped through packs of tourists with cameras hanging around their necks and power-shopping prima donnas with six bags on each arm, or on the arms of their unlucky male partner. Flip-flops slapping on the sidewalk and oversized sunglasses perched on my nose, I headed for my favorite clothing shop. Its doors were propped open, and an assortment of tired boyfriends stood like sentinels on either side. Why they didn't wait in the air-conditioned interior, I had no idea. Maybe they were afraid they'd catch shopping cooties or something. Breezing past a guy clad in head-to-toe black with a ball cap and sunglasses, I swooped toward the first sale rack and sorted through the tank tops. Picking out a blue one with fancy straps, I held it up to my chest, checking how it went with my cut-off jean shorts. Once, they'd been my favorite pair of jeans. Now they were my favorite pair of shorts, and I would wear them until they unraveled around my ass. I spent 15 minutes loading up on discount tops, gradually making my way toward the change rooms at the back. My phone chimed again. Sin checking in. I texted that I was almost done and would meet her at the cafe in 20 minutes. As I shoved my phone back in my pocket, I spotted Mr. All in Black leaning against a pillar, all alone. His sunglasses pointed at his phone. His unlucky girlfriend must have been avoiding association with him in public. Couldn't blame her. Skipping to the change rooms, I locked the door and stripped off my flower-patterned tank top, then tried on the blue one. Not bad. Except with my red hair, I looked like Mystique. Maybe not. I tried on a few more shirts, separating them into probably not and what the hell was I thinking when I picked this up piles. As I pulled on a deep purple top with a neckline that plunged way deeper than expected, the change room door rattled. Occupied, I called as I squinted at my girls on full display, the edges of my red bra peeking out. Probably not a work-appropriate top. I bet Aaron would like it, though. The door rattled again, then burst open. I yelped, jumping back before it hit me. I said, Mr. All in Black shoved into the change room and grabbed me by the throat. Choking, I clutched his wrist as he elbowed the door shut and locked it again. He pressed me into the wall, knocking hangers onto the floor, then lifted his sunglasses up.
Remember me?
He growled. Oh, shit. It was the sorcerer guy, the Queen of Spades' original owner. Fingers squeezing my throat, he pinned me against the wall with his body so I couldn't kick him.
I'd like my artifact back, girl.
I raked my fingers over his wrist, scoring bloody tracks. He hissed, then stuck his hand into his pocket. I felt him press a card against my stomach.
Ori Torque O'Malley.
Heat flashed through my body, then agonizing pain raked across my nerves, lighting my bones on fire. I convulsed, his grip on my throat choking off my scream.
That doesn't feel good, does it?
He loosened his hold and I sucked in a trembling gasp.
Where's my artifact?
I stared at him, unable to respond. My vision blurred and my body shaking from the aftershock of the torment. I felt freezing cold all over.
Where is my artifact?
He snarled, squeezing my throat again. Jaw clenching, I tipped my head toward my purse. As soon as he turned, I flung my fist up and punched him in the ear. He grunted in pain and shoved me into the wall, but I rammed both arms down on his wrist, breaking his weakened grip on my throat. Air rushed into my lungs, and a violent coughing fit racked my body. He shoved me onto the floor. Silver flashed in his hand. A medieval-looking dagger, the blade pointed at my face. Someone rapped on the change room door.
Everything okay in there, miss?
I didn't dare look away from the sorcerer. He flicked his gaze to the unseen woman, then brought the dagger closer to my face. The warning was clear. If I said the wrong thing, he'd shove the blade into my eye socket.
Fine,
I rasped.
I just dropped my bag.
Let me know if you need anything, the sales lady replied, her tone unconvinced. Neither me nor the sorcerer moved, waiting to see if she said anything else. The normal bustle of the shop went on uninterrupted, our life-and-death scuffle unnoticed. The sorcerer lowered the tip of his knife until it hovered just below my eye.
Ori Calafacio.
The blade glowed cherry red, the heat scorching my cheek.
Where is it?
Pressing into the floor to get away from the hot steel, I whispered,
My purse.
His lips pulled back in a malicious grin, and his arm tensed, the dagger's point dipping toward my throat. My phone chimed loudly. He started, his head snapping toward the sound. I shoved his wrist upward, pushing the lethal blade away from my skin. My other hand slapped his hip, right over his pocket of card artifacts.
Ori Torque O'Malley,
I gasped. A strangled cry erupted from him, his muscles spasming from the pain spell. He crumpled on top of me, the dagger clattering to the floor. With a surge of panic-heightened strength, I shoved him off and scrambled up. He grabbed me and we toppled into the door. The door gave way, dumping us onto the hard floor tiles. Shoppers cried out in shock. Flailing wildly, I tore free. As I shoved backward on my ass, he lunged into the change room.
Someone yelled to call the police. The sorcerer reappeared with my purse under his arm, his dagger in one hand and a playing card in his other. His lips moved in a near-silent incantation, and the air rippled. Invisible force hit me like a football tackle, and the spell hurled me into a rack of plus-sized bras. As the bras and I crashed to the floor in a tangle of pink and white lace, the sorcerer bolted for the door. Panting, I burst out of the mess and charged after him.
He could take his stupid card back if he wanted it that bad, but he was not stealing my purse.
The sorcerer raced out the open doors and bowled through the afternoon foot traffic. As unfortunate tourists went flying, I tackled the sorcerer from behind. He went down with a furious shout. Before I could pin him, he slammed me onto the sidewalk. Screaming people fled as he raised his dagger. He slashed the blade at my stomach. A foot in a pink sandal swung out of nowhere and kicked his hand. The knife caught my shirt with a loud tearing sound. Rearing back, the sorcerer pulled out a new playing card.
Ori!
His shout cut off and his face went slack. He tipped over backward, head smacking the pavement. I blinked dazedly at the pretty pink sandals that had saved me. My stare rose up the woman's legs, over a cute sundress and found Sin's blue hair. She stood with her hand extended over the sorcerer, a vial held upside down over his unconscious form. The vial disappeared into her purse as she crouched beside me.
Are you okay?
I pulled a jumbo bra off my wrist and tossed it away.
Now I'm okay.
A crowd gathered around us and three saleswomen from the store hung out the door, their faces ghostly white.
We called the police, a woman said. They're on the way. Do you need an ambulance?
I'm fine.
My voice sounded like crunching gravel and I massaged my sore throat. Sin pulled me up, her arm around my shoulders. Someone handed me my purse and I clutched it to my chest. My purse. No one was allowed to steal my purse. It had my wallet in it.
We need to leave before the police arrive.
Sin whispered in my ear.
But I haven't paid for this top.
I don't think they care. The shirt is trash. Okay, that was mean. It wasn't the most tasteful shirt, but my boobs looked fantastic. Sin pulled me into motion.
She needs to sit down, she announced. There's a bench this way. Come on.
People moved aside for us, then closed the gap again, imprisoning the sorcerer behind a wall of captivated bystanders. Sin steered me away from the commotion, her pace increasing the farther we got. I stumbled along, my knees trembling. Two blocks away, she pushed me onto a bench and dug out her phone. As she dialed a number, I hugged my purse and squinted at the bright street, trying to pull myself together.
Hurry, Sin was saying into her phone. I think she's in shock. I don't know yet, just hurry.
She stuffed her phone back in her purse and crouched in front of me.
Tori, what happened?
That jackass ambushed me in the change room. He wanted his card back.
His what?
The artifact I stole when I helped Aaron.
Her eyes widened.
He was one of the rogues from last weekend.
Yeah, he kept demanding his artifact back.
I frowned.
Where did you come from anyway?
Weren't you meeting me at the cafe? The bus drives right by the store, so I got off early. I thought we could walk to the restaurant together.
She tugged on my purse.
Let me see your stomach.
What's wrong with my stomach?
She pulled my purse away and I saw what was wrong. The sorcerer's dagger hadn't caught only my shirt. Blood stained the fabric around the tear, but when Sin lifted the hem, we found a shallow scratch that had barely broken my skin. Well, this explained why she'd called my shirt trash. It was literally destined for the garbage.
Okay, that's just a minor cut. Good.
Sin tugged my shirt down.
Are you hurt anywhere else?
No, I'm just...
I took a shaky breath.
He used a spell. Ori Torquio something, and it really hurt.
Oh,
Sin murmured.
I'm sorry, Tori.
That's an illegal spell. He shouldn't have had something like that.
Well, it's not like he's a law-abiding citizen.
She sat beside me, patting my shoulder while I practiced slow, even breathing. In the frenzied panic of the fight, I hadn't realized how shaky and dazed that pain spell had left me.
The dizzy out-of-body feeling lingered stubbornly. A revving engine rose above the other sounds, then the squeal of brakes. A car lurched as a black motorcycle cut it off and veered toward the sidewalk. It jumped the curb and slid to a stop, forcing pedestrians to scatter. The leather-clad driver flipped his tinted visor up. Kai? I blinked at him. Whoa. How had I not noticed how badass he was before now? Sin dragged me to the bike and pushed me onto the seat behind him. The leather vibrated alarmingly under my butt. Unhooking a spare helmet from the back, Sin handed it to me. Put that on. As I attempted to jam the helmet over my ponytail, she spoke quietly to Kai. I had to pull the tie out of my hair, freeing my curls from their ponytail before I could get the helmet on. Sin stuffed my purse into the saddlebag behind my thigh, then squeezed my arm. Kai'll get you out of here, she assured me. Just hold on tight, okay? I obediently wrapped my arms around Kai's waist. What about you? I'm gonna see what I can find out about that sorcerer before the police cart him off. I'll check in with you later. She nodded at Kai, then marched back to the scene of the crime.
Pick your feet up, Tori,
Kai instructed, pulling his visor down. I've never ridden a motorcycle before, I told him, reluctantly lifting my sandals off the ground and half expecting the bike to tip over. But Kai kept it steady.
All you have to do is hold on.
He craned his neck to look back at me.
Use the footrest.
Pulling my feet up higher, I found sturdy metal pegs to prop them on. Okay, this wasn't so bad. The engine growled and the motorcycle jumped into traffic. I clung tightly to Kai, wide-eyed behind my helmet visor. The busy street was bumper to bumper, but Kai zoomed between cars and down the center line with no regard for traffic laws. He cut off Robson Street and wound through a maze of side roads, heading east toward the edge of downtown. As we left the skyscrapers behind, I expected him to turn north toward the Crow and Hammer, but he took a right instead. Small, quaint shops with colorful awnings and outdoor markets replaced the downtown buildings. We passed the edge of Chinatown. Then he turned onto a residential street lined with mature trees and cute little houses. The motorcycle rolled to a stop in front of a beige house with blue trim, the tiny front yard enclosed by a wooden fence with a trellis arch over the front walk. As Kai cut the engine, I took in the adorable cottage-style house, then carefully swung off and wobbled a step away. Kai jumped off the bike, set the kickstand, then pulled me into his arms. I squawked in surprise. I can walk. He ignored my protest and carried me under the trellis as Aaron rushed out of the house to meet us, his expression grim.
How is she?
He demanded.
Sin said no serious injuries, but he hit her with a Torque spell.
Aaron hissed. Spinning on his heel, he backtracked up the stairs to the front step.
Ezra's on his way. He'll be here in a couple minutes.
Guys, really, I'm fine. The way my voice croaked from my bruised throat wasn't convincing. And unsurprisingly, they ignored me. Inside, Kai carried me past a landing with stairs up to the second floor. The living room featured big bow windows and French doors leading into a dining room. A large sofa and reclining chair filled the space, and a huge flat-screen TV took up the opposite wall, several game systems arrayed on a low stand beneath it. Sweeping into the dining room, Kai deposited me on the table. I pulled my helmet off, glaring at them.
I said I was fine.
I know what you said.
Aaron took my wrist, his fingers pressed to my pulse.
But I don't believe you. Torque spells can send the body into neurogenic shock.
Into what?
Kai dropped his helmet on the table, knocking a stack of old flyers onto the hardwood floor.
Do you feel dizzy, disoriented, weak, clammy?
No,
I said indignantly, then hesitated.
Not anymore.
Aaron and Kai exchanged knowing looks.
There's blood on her shirt,
Kai said. I swatted Aaron's hands away before he could lift my shirt, then pulled up the hem to display the shallow scratch.
It's nothing.
I'll get the kit.
Kai walked out and his footsteps sounded on the stairs.
Any other injuries?
Aaron asked.
No, you guys are completely overreacting.
Aaron's eyebrows shot up.
Maybe it hasn't sunk in yet that a rogue mythic hunted you down and almost killed you. Personally, I don't think we're overreacting.
My stomach turned as belated fear shivered through me. When he put it that way.
Kai reappeared with a first aid kit so large it could store an entire paramedic team.
Tell us what happened. Every detail you can remember.
Holding up my shirt, I recounted the tale while Kai cleaned the scrape on my stomach. Since it had already stopped bleeding, he didn't bandage it. Dropping my shirt down again, I concluded with Sin's rescue.
He was waiting for you?
Aaron growled.
How the hell did he know you'd be there?
No clue. I told Sin this morning where I was heading, but that's it. My brother knew I was going shopping, but not where.
Then how could he have...
Aaron broke off as the front door banged. Ezra strode into the room, dressed in running gear with his brown curls windswept.
Is she hurt? How bad is it?
She's okay,
Kai said.
Just a scratch on her stomach.
Ezra stopped in front of me, his worried eyes sweeping down to check I still had all my limbs. As his gaze came back up, it stuttered to a stop a good bit lower than my face. Huh. Well, I'd wondered if Ezra didn't date because he wasn't interested in women. But my impressively displayed cleavage had just proved otherwise. Aaron put his hands on his hips and gave me a once-over as though Ezra's ogling had given him permission to look too.
I've gotta say, Tori, that's a daring shirt.
I shoplifted it.
The three guys gave me the same incredulous stare.
I didn't mean to,
I added glumly.
Sin rushed me away before I could pay for it.
I tugged the neckline up, but it slid back down until my bra was peeking out again.
I didn't even want it.
Aaron struggled to focus. Would you like to borrow a shirt?
That's okay. I can change at home.
About that.
He leaned against the table beside me.
I think you should hang out here for a few days.
Huh?
If that sorcerer found you.
Kai said.
Other rogues involved in the ambush last week could find you too. They probably think you're a guild member, a mythic. They may come after you for that artifact or use you to get to Aaron.
Alarm flashed through me, and I shook my head.
I'll be fine. I live with a cop, you know.
You do?
Didn't I mention my brother's a police officer?
Well, he is. I'm perfectly safe at home.
You'll be safer with us.
Ezra's smooth, soothing voice washed over me.
We'd worry about you by yourself.
Damn it, why did he have to play the we'll worry card?
It's only a few days.
Kai added,
since you and Sin took out the sorcerer, we have a place to start. We'll figure out where he came from, who he's working with, and most importantly, who he's working for.
My mouth twisted. I didn't want to freeload off the guys any more than I wanted three overprotective bodyguards shadowing my every move. But I thought of that sorcerer and his glowing dagger, and I imagined him stalking through my apartment. Justin might be a cop, but he stood no chance against mythics he didn't know existed. Suppressing an anxious shiver, I reluctantly nodded. For a few days, I guess.
Great,
Aaron said brightly.
You can sleep in my room. I'll take the sofa.
Kai pulled a face.
You're a slob. She won't want to sleep in your room. Oh, are you offering yours? She'll love that. At least my room is clean.
Mine's clean, just a bit cluttered.
You have weapons everywhere. She's liable to trip on a sword and impale herself.
As they argued, Ezra glanced between them, then walked away. Easing off the table, I followed him. Aaron and Kai continued to bicker, not noticing our departure. At the top of the stairs was a small landing with three doors, one open. I stepped into the threshold as Ezra pulled folded sheets from the closet. The small bedroom, with one slanted wall where the roof cut into the space, was simple and tidy. A double bed with a gray patchwork blanket, a hand-me-down dresser with chips in the wood, and a bookshelf loaded with paperbacks and movies. An acoustic guitar on a stand sat in the corner. The art on the wall surprised me the most. Four large prints of mountain landscapes, one for each season. I studied them, finding an unexpected resonance between the peaceful scenery and Ezra's meltingly smooth voice that calmed me so easily. I'm good with a sofa, I told him. I've been sleeping on one for 9 months.
You'll have more privacy here. I don't mind.
He stripped the bed down to the mattress, then remade it with clean sheets. Flipping the comforter back over the bed, he turned, his gaze searching mine.
Are you okay, Tori?
I threw my hands up. How many times do I have to say I'm fine?
I just want to be sure.
He tilted his head in question.
Do you want a hug?
My exasperation evaporated, along with my forced nonchalance about the sorcerer's attack.
Okay.
The word came out in an embarrassingly childish whisper. He stepped close and wrapped his warm arms around me. As I buried my face in his chest, my breath released in a shuddering exhale, and I had to fight back the sting of tears. Helping Aaron had been one thing. I'd run headfirst into that fight. But being ambushed, getting strangled, having a lethal blade almost shoved in my guts, even I couldn't shrug that off like it was nothing. In Ezra's arms, I felt safe and protected. Part of me wanted to melt against him and cry like a baby. Another part of me hated this false feeling of safety that would only last for as long as he was around. Sooner or later, I'd be on my own again. He held me as I steadied my breathing. With a quiet sniff, I was not crying, damn it, I raised my head. Aaron and Kai stood in the doorway, watching. My face flushed, but they didn't seem shocked by my girly emotions, nor were they gleeful at catching me in their friend's arms. Concern was all I saw in their eyes. Ezra stepped away, one hand on the small of my back.
I'm starving. Why don't we order pizza?
I don't know, Kai said. That'll depend on Tori. Me? I asked blankly.
If you want pizza with pineapple on it, we'll have to throw you out.
I blinked, not entirely sure if he was joking. But Aaron laughed.
If she wants pineapple, she can have it. You don't have to eat it. Its existence alone is an insult to all pizza.
With a snort, Aaron scooped me to his side. He grinned, his confidence banishing the last shiver of my fear. I smiled back as he pulled me to the stairs. Ezra and Kai followed, the latter still explaining why pineapple on pizza was unforgivable blasphemy. Halfway down, Aaron stopped.
Tori?
Yeah?
Are you cold?
Did his fiery magic make him impervious to outside temperatures? The house was as hot as an oven.
No.
He glanced at the ceiling like it held the answers to all life's mysteries.
Are you sure you don't want to borrow a shirt?
I looked down. My boobs stared back at me. Fine, I'll borrow a shirt. All three of them sighed, but I wasn't sure if it was from disappointment or relief. Huffing, I stepped out from under Aaron's arm and marched down the stairs alone. Men. Chapter 15. It had been months since I'd slept in a proper bed, but for some dumb reason I couldn't sleep. Snuggled into a pillow that smelled of fresh laundry detergent and a hint of whatever nectar of the gods soap Ezra used, I should have been floating on blissful clouds of slumber. But despite the exhaustion leading my eyelids, I couldn't keep them closed. With no distractions, worries occupied my thoughts. Mainly what would happen next. Sin had called while we were waiting for pizza to arrive. She'd gotten the name of the sorcerer, and tomorrow the guys would do more research into who he was. The police had taken him away, but as Aaron had explained, he wouldn't remain in custody for long. Mythics weren't held in human jails. He'd be let go. And if he didn't turn himself into Magipole, they would put out a bounty for him. I wasn't naive enough to expect the sorcerer to turn himself in, which meant he'd be on the loose again tomorrow. We had no idea how he'd set up an ambush outside my favorite store, and no idea how to prevent him from stalking me. Rolling over, I absently scratched at my neck. The shirt Aaron had lent me featured a horrifically itchy tag, and as I contorted my arm to adjust it, fabric rubbed against the cut on my stomach. My throat still ached from the sorcerer strangling me, and in the silent, dark bedroom, the array of pain and discomfort was difficult to ignore. I hadn't been able to dwell on anything earlier in the night. After pizza, Aaron parked himself in front of the huge TV, picked up a video game controller, and challenged me to a go-kart race. I sucked at it, driving off cliffs and spinning out on banana peels, but trash-talking Aaron while he drove laps around me was fun. When Ezra joined us after showering, the game got even more fun. Instead of me losing fantastically to Aaron, Aaron and I both lost to Ezra. I didn't mind, because watching Aaron curse Ezra out every time he plowed Aaron off the track was hilarious.
Kai eventually took up the fourth controller, and we raced the evening away, complete with popcorn and beer. I threw in the proverbial flag at midnight and watched the guys duke it out one more time on the most difficult track. Ezra won. Again. "I thought you couldn't drive," I told him as we high-fived.
"I can drive just fine,"
he grinned.
"I just can't tell how far away the other cars are. Not a problem in a video game, especially when I'm in the lead."
I'd fallen into bed shortly after that. Rolling over again, I squinted at the ceiling. Even with the window open, the room was stuffy, and my sore throat was parched. Untangling from the blankets, I climbed out of bed. My borrowed t-shirt fell below my butt, and for comfort's sake, I ditched my shorts and bra. I scratched the back of my neck again. Damn tag. My gaze drifted to Ezra's dresser. Would he mind if I borrowed a different shirt? I cracked the top drawer open and peeked inside. Socks folded in pairs, and boxer briefs unfolded. Not wanting to dig through his underclothes, I went straight for the bottom drawer. Aha! T-shirts. I dug into the tidy stack, searching for one without a tag. As I wiggled my fingers into the fabric, my nails caught on paper. Lifting the shirts up, I found a worn folder with a thin stack of paper in it. The edge of a photograph stuck out from the pile. Sometimes I'm a bad person. With a guilty glance at the closed bedroom door, I slid the photo out. A boy and a girl, around 15, stood with their arms around each other. A typical first high school relationship photo. The girl had plain blonde hair that looked like it had been trimmed with kitchen scissors, but her broad smile was beautiful in its unrestrained joy. The boy, a few inches taller, had dark hair cut short and warm brown eyes in a handsome olive-skinned face. Ezra, before he was scarred and blinded. Behind him and the girl, an expanse of mountains spread in a breathtaking view. It was a happy photo, full of youthful exuberance. But heavy sorrow infused me as I studied it. Despite the bright colors and the young, smiling couple, the photo's location at the bottom of a drawer in an old folder told a different story. Ezra didn't want to throw the photo away, but he didn't want to be reminded of it all the time either. I slid it back into its spot in the folder, leaving one corner sticking out the way I'd found it. I rearranged the stack of shirts, closed the drawer, and stood up. Pulling off Aaron's shirt, I turned it inside out and slid it back on. Itching from guilt instead of a scratchy tag, I cracked the bedroom door open. The other two doors were closed, no lights glowing from beneath them. Aaron and Kai were asleep. I tiptoed down the stairs to the landing by the front door and headed for the kitchen, passing the living room. On the sofa, Ezra was sprawled on his back, one arm hanging off the cushions. His ability to turn rooms ice cold didn't appear to help him with the heat. His lightweight blanket was mostly on the floor, exposing his chest and the waistband of his dark boxer briefs. I froze in place, staring. Illuminated by the dim glow of a street lamp outside the window, his physique alone would have been enough to stop me. Hot damn, the man was movie star fit. But that wasn't what halted me in my tracks. Long, thick scars raked across his side. Scarcely believing my eyes, I stepped into the living room, my body cold all over. When I'd asked Ezra how he'd gotten the scar on his face, the guys had joked about a shark attack. But if they'd told me these scars had been inflicted by a nightmarish monster, I wouldn't have doubted them. The white line started by his right hip and swept diagonally up his abs, stopping just shy of his sternum. The wounds ran parallel, as though giant claws had ripped up his side. Like the scar on his face, the edges were jagged and showed no sign of having been stitched closed. But cuts deep enough to leave scars like that should have required hundreds of stitches, right? Moving closer, I picked out fainter lines on his bronze skin. None were as terrible as the three long scars on his side, but he'd suffered other injuries. What the hell had happened to him? I didn't know what life was like for a typical mythic, but this couldn't possibly be normal.
Don't ask Ezra why he joined the guild.
Aaron's warning. He'd told me not to ask about Ezra's family either. Could those things be related to his scars? To his blinded eye? Were they related to the photo hidden in his bottom dresser drawer? Ezra's head turned and I froze all over again when his eyes opened. He glanced across me, like he wasn't the least bit surprised to see me standing there, then scanned the room behind me. I tensed, expecting him to demand why I was standing over him in the dead of night. Instead, he gestured for me to come closer. Confused, I took two more steps. He grabbed my wrist and pulled me down, still surveying the room. I dropped into a crouch beside him.
"Someone is in the house,"
he breathed.
"They just went up the stairs."
"What?" I whispered, fear rippling through me. "How do you know?"
"Air currents."
He pushed up on one elbow, all those lovely muscles of his tensing and the exposed scars pulling taut.
"When people move, the air shifts."
Whoa. I had no clue being an aeromage gave him that kind of extrasensory perception.
No wonder it was so difficult to sneak up on him. He rolled off the sofa and onto his feet without making a sound. His head turned, his pale eye looking at me without seeing me.
"Tori, will you watch my blind side?"
Caught off guard, I whispered a hesitant affirmation. He started toward the stairs and I followed right behind him, scrutinizing everything on our left. Stopping beside the landing, he angled his head upward.
"He just came out of my room."
Ezra raised one hand and made a small gesture. Wind whipped down the stairs with howling force. Frenzied scuffling erupted, like someone trying to catch their balance. Then came the crashing sound of a falling body.
Thump, crash, thump, bam!
A man landed at the bottom of the stairs in a crumpled heap. As Ezra lunged for him, the intruder lurched up, his face covered by a ski mask. Real inconspicuous in this heat. But I could identify him by the bone-chilling cold and sparkling mist surrounding him. Ice Guy. Arm snapping back, Ezra threw a lightning-fast punch. Ice Guy ducked, and Ezra's fist went right through the drywall. The mage cast a wave of glittering ice chips, but a swirl of wind deflected them. Spinning, Ezra decked the guy in the jaw. They grappled in the tiny landing, and I hung back, helplessly. How was I supposed to watch Ezra's blind side while he was pummeling someone? Gleaming steel flashed, and Ezra leaped clear in another freakishly rapid movement. Ice Guy brandished his dagger, then thrust it. Foot-long shards of ice formed out of the snowy cloud clinging to the mage, and a sparkling projectile shot for Ezra. He cast his arms wide, and a gust of wind flung the shards away from him. Lunging in, he slammed into the mage, his physical fighting style a stark contrast to Aaron's fire-wielding approach, and Ice Guy wasn't prepared for it. His head smacked into the wall, and he whipped his dagger out, using the deadly edge to force Ezra to retreat. Teeth bared, the mage conjured another array of ice shards, but this time they didn't shoot at Ezra. They shot at me. Ezra whirled around and flung a hand toward me. Wind hit me as it rushed toward the shards, countering their momentum. They tumbled out of the air, but now Ezra's back was to the other mage. An ice sprouted from his dagger, tripling its length as he swung it at Ezra's unprotected spine. Ezra ducked, and the ice blade swept over his head. Pivoting, he planted his feet, balled his hand and hammered his fist into Ice Guy's stomach. Air boomed, and the mage sailed the length of the entryway before ripping the screen door off its hinges. He tumbled right out of the house. As Ezra shot after Ice Guy, I followed on his heels, resuming my blind spot watching duty. Ezra reached the threshold, then skidded to a stop. I ran into him. He spun, grabbed me, and threw us both to the floor. In an instant, a barrage of glowing darts flashed through the air. The orange spikes peppered the walls at chest height, flashing with sparks before dissolving into nothing. Outside, an engine revved and tires squealed on the pavement. The roar of the escaping car shattered the quiet night, and the tires screeched again as the vehicle took a corner on two wheels. Ezra sat up, kneeling over my legs. I lay where I'd fallen, blinking dazedly but unharmed. In the instant before we hit the floor, the air had thickened under me like an invisible balloon, cushioning our fall.
"It got away, huh?"
Aaron stood halfway up the stairs, as casual as could be for having woken up to the sounds of battle. Kai waited a few steps above him. Gulping, I whipped my gaze away. Yeah, so Aaron and Kai were in their boxers too, and they were as deliciously toned as Ezra.
Speaking of Ezra, guess where my stare ended up? Yeah, the hot Aero Mage sitting on my knees, shirtless and covered in a fine...